You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1. Registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor, or 2. Solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor. Integrated Partners and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCM News Talk 580 on a Thursday. Welcome aboard New Retirement Radio, brought to you by Prout Financial Design, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
It is so good to be here. Thank you. Ron Jolly on the 27th of March. The bit of schizophrenia with the weather. Back and forth. A gorgeous one out there today.
Good.
Sunny. A bit brisk, but sunny. Really nice. If you do have a question of a financial nature that you would like us to help answer, Ron, if you would.
You can phone it in right now, this hour, unless you're listening to the replay Saturday morning. Call us or text us. It's the same number, 947-0023. That's 231-947-0023.
Great, thank you. Joining us this morning, Nathan Prout, Financial Advisor at Prout Financial Design. Good morning.
Good morning. It is great to be here.
Thanks. Great to have you. 10 years plus, right?
Yeah, just over now.
Yeah. Just over 10. And Beth Shire, our own Director of Marketing. Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to be here. Another sunny day.
Yes, great to have you. You have some very interesting stats. That'll be fun to see, I think. But before that, before we go into the subject of the day, there was a great article written by, let's see here.
Good old what's-his-name or what's-her-name?
Terry Gorsline.
Terry, yeah. These
Terry Gorsline, for the Bay Life magazine. And the Biederman first family of Traverse City Radio, the Biedermans. An amazing piece. If you want to get a good idea of the history of the Biedermans and their impact on Traverse City, as well as on broadcasting within Traverse City, the Traverse City region, this article is invaluable for that. I was amazed. They have about 3 pages of extensive information, pictures, and all the rest.
They are the owners of this and several radio stations.
Yes. Yeah. Now, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, Jill and I were taking a break before she was to have a surgery. We went up north, and in that hotel we were staying was an amazing library. And within that library was this book on public speaking written by a Mr. Greenville Kleiser. And it talked about, and this was, by the way, published in 1935. So it goes back a way. Back before Les came to Traverse City, I think, in 1939.
That'd be,
So just amazing to give an idea of how forward-thinking Les was. But it brought to mind the whole Biederman family and the visionary status, if you will, that their family has. Radio in the Future by Dr. Walter Damrosch, an address before the 4th Annual Assembly of the National Advisory Council on Radio and Education, October 9th, 1934, at the Drake Hotel in Chicago. And I thought it'd be fun to read this. There's a couple, 3 paragraphs here that to me were just so prescient. I mean, just forecastive, if you will. That's not even a word. Anyway, I'll read it. I've been asked to talk to you tonight on the future of radio and education. So this is a speech he gave. I cannot make a speech, much less an oration, All I can do is to present you such facts as I have gathered as a pioneer for music over the radio during the last 9 years, and then to deduce from these facts such fancies, hopes, and perhaps prophecies as I can regarding the future happenings and possibilities in this most far-reaching invention of our times.
Radio.
Radio. My first symphonic concert over the radio was given 9 years ago. A few months before this, I'd made up my mind that after 42 years as conductor of the New York Symphony Society, I was entitled to reduce my public activities somewhat. This could only be done by retiring from that job, as it entailed 4 symphonic concerts every week for 25 weeks and innumerable rehearsals besides. But fate turned me into another direction, which opened a new and marvelous world to me. Most of you will remember the microphone and loudspeaker of those days. The results were far from perfect. The different instruments of a symphonic orchestra could not be clearly defined. As I listened to, a good example of that might be Interlaken. I think it was a concert there back in 1945. And everything seemed kind of muddled in terms of the sound and the quality, even in 45. The overtones, which marked the difference between a clarinet and a flute, a bassoon, or a horn, were not indicated with sufficient clarity to enable the listener to get a wholly satisfactory impression from radio transmission. But there was something fascinating to me in the mere idea that such music as I produced in a studio of the National Broadcasting Company could be heard by millions of people all over the United States. And I had the conviction that this was but the beginning and that American engineers would continue to perfect this new instrument more and more.
There it is.
So, you know, I thought, I wonder just what influences Les was hearing in those days, back in the mid-30s, that they were all agog about the potential of radio and its ability to influence and inform people in a very different way.
Yeah. Les Biederman, founder of the station. I'm looking at his portrait on the wall right now.
There it's really amazing. And I'm going to read then a few quotes from the magazine. It's just so awesome. So in 1939, Les Biederman moved his family from Philadelphia to the rural, sleepy town of Traverse City. He was pursuing his dream to claim his stake in the barren frontier of broadcast radio waves in northern Michigan. So talk about scary. I mean, you know.
He looked at a map. You know, they had a map of where there were radio stations. He goes, there's a place that doesn't have one. And they have water.
What a place to pick. Obviously, a good choice. And then a quote here from Ross.
Let me just preface that, say, the son of Les, who is our current leader.
Yes. Thank you. Ross Biederman, yes. My father dreamed the radio into existence. He wanted to go into business for himself. It was built on a shoestring budget. We would borrow money and pay it off, then borrow more, recalls Les's son Ross. You know, but not exactly an easy time. And then the Biederman Foundation. Well, a quote, within that situation or within that area is another quote from Ross about his dad I thought was really, it's just amazing. My dad was a genius. He quit school in the 8th grade. He learned engineering work. He was ambitious and community-driven. He taught me that we do things for other people. You don't hear many sons say that they claim that their father is a genius. I thought that was quite a testament to Les. And then just before he died, they started the Biederman Foundation with $1 million. And, of course, the money and orientation here, we figured the inflation-adjusted amount today, about $5 million in today's dollars. A good sum.
Yeah.
A good sum for sure. The Biederman Foundation to donate, in essence, to continue to assist the whole area of Traverse City in northern Michigan.
You know, when Colleen started here, and I, in the early 80s, I didn't work on it, but she did. This board that you see in front of me, the broadcast board with all the controls, mixing board, the one she started on was homemade by Les and his partner.
Really?
From an old, pieces from an old casket company.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
they made do, eh?
Yeah, they got all the wires and the knobs and somehow glued them together, and presto. So...
Well, Colleen,
go ahead, Colleen.
Oh, I was just saying, Les actually hired me here.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How long ago was that?
That was in 1980.
Oh.
Wow.
Wow.
So what was the interview like for you? Do you recall, Miss?
Well, now put it this way. I didn't know what I was doing. So it was kind of like a song and dance of BS because I didn't know what to do. Yeah. But I said that I did. So that was good. That was good enough for him to that I believed in myself that I could figure it out.
He told you to go in the studio and
make a
recording.
Make a demo.
Yeah. Make a demo.
Yeah.
Which she didn't know how to do.
I wasn't sure what that even was.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. So you guys got your start.
Yeah.
Now, Ron, when did you start here at TCM?
Well, I was in Traverse, 86. I think summer of 86 I started here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So was Les still around at that point?
Oh, yeah, That was his final days before he moved out and Ross moved into the big office.
Okay. Well, and then he at that time, he moved back to the pad. Remember his little place back here? He had a little...
secret office in the back.
Apartment-ish sort of thing back there.
So he had a place to go, come to, in essence.
To hide out where he could smoke cigars and nobody would be bothered.
Yeah, all right. Well, what a history. And I just... this book on public speaking is a lot about radio, but a lot about public speaking as well. It's an excellent book. I couldn't put it down. They allowed me to take it.
Oh, that's nice.
It was really nice. And, man, the history that goes back. And these people who were predicting what radio would do, Les went on to that wave, and what a difference it's made to our community. So... hats off to the Biedermans, and thank you for your leadership within this community. What an impact it's had, positive by any means, you bet, by every means, rather.
Hey, do you want to start with a question?
Yes, let's start with a question, shall we? You bet.
I am familiar with the 8% benefit of delaying the start of me taking retirement benefits starting at age 62, reference to Social Security.
Yes.
I am presently receiving spousal death benefits, and I'm presently age 61. If I were to simply continue taking the spousal benefits for the foreseeable future, will my delayed benefits continue to accrue at that 8% per year? Spousal benefits, is that a Social Security benefit?
It is indeed. Okay. Yeah. So she's on survivor benefits.
Survivor benefits, okay.
Survivor benefits, yes.
So...
The first question I would have is if your Social Security will ever catch what your deceased spouse's benefit is.
So you would get to collect the greater of the two, either your own benefit or your deceased spouse's benefit. Now, when you decide to collect, and I don't know the answer to this one, can you wait to collect on your own? Bob Simpson's going to be here on the
17th, April
17th. 17th of April. And I wish that he were here right now.
Right.
I honestly am not certain about that. I think that one can wait as long as you wish up to age 70 and your benefits will continue to increase. But I don't know, whether how Social Security handles that. That's a great question. So we'll have to punt on that one, Ron. I'm sorry. I don't know the answer.
I'm going to send a message back to that person and remind them. April 17th,
yes, thank
Bob
you,
Simpson used to head up the Social Security office in Traverse City. Will be your guest here.
He will.
All right.
He will indeed. You bet. So that would be a great question to pose to Bob. I know he'd know the answer. Mm-hmm. So today we're talking about tax account moves, retirement account moves you can still make for 24. Now, we recognize this is 2025, but you can still make these for 2024 until, depending on when you file your taxes or April 15th. Number one, you can make an IRA contribution still until April 15th of this year. And you can basically say to the IRS, I have made an IRA contribution, even though you haven't, as long as you make that contribution by April 15th of this year to your IRA. And as long as, obviously, it's available to you, a regular IRA. Now, anyone can do an IRA as long as you have earned income, whether it's a non-deductible IRA, a traditional IRA, number two, or number three, a Roth IRA.
Depending on your earned income.
Depending on your earned income, again, and that of your spouse. So your spouse could have earned income. You may not outside the home. You could make a contribution based on your spouse's earned income if you like. Darling, it's great you decided to go off to work. That sort of thing. Okay. And then, you know, maybe you would want her in that case to make a contribution for you.
All sorts of strategies.
All sorts of strategies. A little, maybe, untoward. But anyway, it's amazing. So the amount of the contribution you can make for 24 is how much?
Well, it depends on your age.
Yes. If you're under 50.
$7,000.
Thank you. And if you're 50 in 24, at some point, you can make a contribution up to?
$8,000.
Thank you. I'm glad you know that. So $8,000, as long as your earned income is up to that amount or greater. Non-deductible, which you could turn around and convert to a Roth if you wanted to, even though you can't do the Roth. So it's amazing. You really have a lot of options there. What if you don't want to save that money? Well, don't do it then, okay? I mean, you know, really. So that's one option.
When you do that, you take your, $8,000, for example, and you put it into your IRA by April 15th.
Yes.
Does that lower your adjusted gross income?
Well, it could, and okay. Save you that tax.
Okay.
So depending on your tax bracket, you might save 20 to 25% of the amount that you placed into that. So your tax deduction or tax savings, rather, could wind up being almost $2,000, given that you put in $8,000. And it's a deductible IRA contribution, depending on where your other accounts are and all the rest. Again, as long as you qualify. So ask your trusty accountant. They love the idea that you might do an IRA, and especially if it's deductible. Second, correct an IRA contribution for IRA owners who are now discovering that they have an excess contribution, IRA contribution for 2024. There's still time to correct the contribution and avoid a 6% excess contribution penalty. This can be done by withdrawing or recharacterizing the 24 contribution plus net income or loss attributable by October 15th of 25. So this is all the way to October 15th. Make a SEP contribution. Now, this one was most interesting to me because you can still deduct it as a self-employed individual up to the date that you extend your taxes. Well, what if you don't have the funds to make a fully deductible, as much as you'd like to, perhaps, into a SEP? If you file an extension for taxes, you could deduct it for last year all the way up to October of this year. October 15th, the full date of all extensions allowed. As a self-employed individual, and the amount that you can put in, $69,000.
Wow.
A fair sum. Fully deductible, if you had that sort of income, obviously. That is 25% of up to $345,000 of compensation, just for those who are wondering. So 25%, in essence, the gross percentage at compensation. So let's just say you decided to put $60,000 into a SEP IRA and your income generated from your self-employed business, if you will, or your sole proprietorship, that would generate a deduction of $20,000 or so, depending on your tax bracket, of course. $20,000. Really quite an incentive to save for the long term.
Plus, that money you put away will earn money.
Plus,
yes,
it's invested for the long term and can be a great diversification tool for you as well. Now, you could also establish a solo 401k plan up until April 15th of this year. If you're self-employed for 2024, those limits were $69,000 as well. $76,500 for those age 50 and older. So the solo 401k plan may make even more sense for a very few individuals who are self-employed and who are want to save. W-O-N-T, I think, is the spelling of that. So it's amazing what you've got available to you. And in terms of deductions and things that you still can do, even though many would say, I'm sorry, it's too late.
What if you already filed your taxes? It's too late then, isn't it? Unless you want to go through the...
Unless you want to do through the corrective procedures and tell your accountant, you know, make them go through that whole hassle with you.
Yeah.
Unless you're your own accountant, and then you get to go through the hassle by yourself.
I know a lot of really bored accountants right now, so I'm sure they'd be happy to do that.
Exactly. Now, the word want from Miriam, I cheat regularly on this show now. Accustomed or used to or inclined or apt. A-P-T.
If you are want to do that.
Want.
It looks like won't without the apostrophe.
Nice to use it correctly, too. Yeah. Good luck with that, Dennis.
All right.
Nathan Prout on economic uncertainty. Will it knock the Fed off course from American Funds Capital Group?
And we have a strong maybe. All right. So as Dennis mentioned, yes, this is an article from American Funds. The author is Timothy Eng. The U.S. Federal Reserve, once the primary driver of markets, has taken a backseat this year to government actions and politics. So far, it's been a bumpy ride. An avalanche of changes coming out of Washington, D.C. around tariffs, federal layoffs, and immigration has raised questions about the trajectory of inflation and growth, sending the U.S. stock market into a correction and clouding the Fed's outlook.
And by the way, this was written on the 20th, so pretty recently.
Yeah, exactly 1 week ago. Yep. Market discussions have shifted away from optimism about a soft landing to worries about declining growth and stagflation. Against this backdrop, the Fed kept its finger firmly on the pause button at Wednesday's policy meeting as it adopted a wait-and-see approach. Investors are now left wondering about the Fed's next move.
Yeah, I think the Fed, frankly, is wondering about their next move, too, based on everything we've been able to read.
I mean, you know, the Fed is often really good at doing what they say they're going to do.
Yeah, which is what? Yeah.
Yeah. So, in my view, and this is according to Timothy Eng, rate cuts remain the most likely outcome this year, though I see a patient Fed taking its time before pulling the trigger. Rate reductions are also on the market's radar. Futures markets indicate that the likelihood of a rate cut in 2025 reached about 66% after the March 19th meeting, compared with about 50% in mid-February. Meanwhile, the likelihood of a rate hike this year has fallen into single-digit territory. Separately, the market is pricing in between 2 to 3 25 basis point cuts in 2025, compared with the 2 projected by the Fed.
Now, 25 basis points in regular lingo, a quarter of a percent, 0.25%. Okay,
that's correct. Despite the volatility, fixed income remains attractive. Given my views on the potential range of outcomes, while it may be tempting to limit duration given heightened uncertainty, investors should consider increasing duration due to the possibility of deeper Fed rate cuts than anticipated. So, Dennis, what would be the English translation of
no
that?
No kidding. How about we bring that into regular English? It's talking about bonds. And bonds, actually, they're saying, he says, can be a good value given today's markets and given the jumpiness of the stock market. It doesn't mean that the stock market's a poor value at this point. Prices, especially on those tech companies, have come down significantly. Tesla, Apple, Google, NVIDIA really took a beating yesterday. But anyway, what's interesting about that, further interesting, is if you do want some more safety, they're saying they believe there is some more value in owning bonds. The good old bonds.
Right. Typically the most exciting part of your portfolio.
Right.
All right.
But so, if rates do come down, bond values tend to go up. They travel inversely to each other in terms of price versus interest rates. So it can be a relatively safe place to invest in these days.
Yeah. So then American Funds gets into a few different scenarios. The first one is the Fed maintaining its freeze. So the Fed hit pause on rate cuts in January, holding the federal funds target rate in a range of 4.25 to 4.5%, and ending a streak of 3 meetings where rates fell by a full percentage point. In the short term, we on the U.S. rates team think the Fed will stay on hold. Following the 2024 cuts, we are now closer to the neutral rate, where the Fed is trying to neither stimulate or restrict the economy.
Isn't that interesting? So the numbers are actually relatively positive from the Fed standpoint. Now, their goal is a 2% inflation rate, which we were discussing before the show. It's probably unrealistic, but inflation is certainly coming down.
Yeah. So we believe the Fed is in a relatively good spot in terms of its dual mandate, with inflation generally trending toward its 2% target, as Dennis said, and a slowing yet seemingly resilient labor market. Still, the Consumer Price Index, which stood at 2.8% in February, as well as the Core Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, which was 2.6% in January, remain elevated.
Yeah, it's basically saying the CPI, 2.8% in February, that is a really, to me, that's a good number.
Yeah,
it's on the way. Consumer Price Index, yeah.
For sure, yeah. The Fed has also indicated that it's seeking clarity on the path of Trump administration policies before it moves. In particular, monetary policymakers will need to better understand the impacts on inflation and employment, the components of its dual mandate to promote maximum employment and price stability.
So we're in unknown territory, is what they're saying. You know, 25% tariffs across the board. Does anyone remember in the audience when we had tariffs to this degree worldwide? All of a sudden, it's, you know, exploding, if you will, in terms of tariffs back and forth. Now, some would say we're simply catching up with the rest of the world in a very conservative tariff amount. But what impact it's going to have on our economy in terms of growth and or inflation, we really don't know.
Yeah. Uncertainty around the changes and their effects on the economic outlook is high. As we parse the incoming information, we are focused on separating the signal from the noise as the outlook evolves, said Fed Chair Jerome Powell in a March 19th press conference. We do not need to be in a hurry to adjust our policy stance, and we are all well positioned to wait for clarity.
Yeah, that'll be interesting too. Now, depending on what Congress does in terms of the new tax package that they're talking about, what do they call it, one big bill?
Yeah.
That'll be interesting to see whether or not they actually are able to come in on that, and that gets a vote up.
Yeah. So should the Fed hold rates steady, we anticipate bonds will continue to provide attractive income opportunities given historically elevated starting yields. In this scenario, we expect U.S. Treasuries to remain range bound with 10-year yields in the range of 4 to 5%.
Quote this morning, I think 10-year treasuries were at 4.4%, and the rate is steadily inclining. We're not in an inverse yield curve at this point.
Yeah, investors who already boosted their fixed income allocations as cuts began may see opportunities to add more interest rate exposure if yields drift into the upper end of that range.
A good illustration of that year to date on this pretty well-known bond fund, you can see the overall price action there, Ron.
Yes.
Going up about 2% so far this year in terms of price on that particular bond fund.
Yeah. So the second scenario is the Fed resumes rate cuts. As the Fed parses data on inflation, I see encouraging signs that additional rate reductions may be on the table later this year. Broad-based inflationary pressures, which defined price movements in 21 and 22, while spurring aggressive rate hikes, appear to have eased back to pre-pandemic levels. Looking at the distribution of inflationary trends within the CPI basket, about 50% of the basket is at or below the Fed's 2% target in terms of its annualized rate of inflation. That includes a number of components where prices are outright falling. In addition, the downward price trend in shelter, the largest component of CPI, may continue to filter through and push the headline stat lower. So he thinks the Fed could have enough clarity on economic data and fiscal policy to potentially lower rates in the second half of the year, assuming the economy doesn't weaken and push the Fed to cut even sooner. Falling rates could lead to price appreciation for bonds, especially those with longer durations, as they are more sensitive to changes in interest rates. Bonds may also be expected to help diversify portfolios as stock-bond correlations have begun to normalize.
That's great stuff. It's not just the bonds that we're talking about. It's about mortgage rates. Now, those who have a shorter-term instrument, CDs, T-bills, that sort of thing, beware, your interest rates are probably going to continue to decline. So if you're locked into a strategy of simply rolling that shorter-term debt, if you will, whether it's a CD, whether it's a short-term T-bill or whatever, you may get caught in a short-term environment where your income and or your rate continually declines. That would be the negative to that kind of a situation.
That's correct. And then the third scenario, which the author and we believe is highly unlikely at this point, is the Fed makes a U-turn and hikes rates. A return to rate hikes, while not an outcome I anticipate, cannot be dismissed. Under certain economic conditions, the Fed may be inclined to tighten monetary policy. In one possible outcome, the Trump administration could implement deep and sustained tariffs, leading to a broadening of inflationary pressures. However, the stagflation and lower growth environment that typically accompanies tariffs could complicate the Fed's response. On the other hand, an overheated economy potentially fueled by capital expenditures, tax cuts, and deregulation could prompt the Fed to curb growth if consumer prices move meaningfully higher.
And that just means that, as typical, we have so much we could be worrying about. It's crazy. The typical stuff.
That said, I believe the threshold of clear indicators needed for the Fed to hike rates is much higher than the threshold to lower rates. In a rate hiking environment, I anticipate that yields would rise, particularly on the short end of the curve. So amid uncertainty, balance may be best. While viewing the mosaic of rate path probabilities and the magnitude of rate moves, I land in a spot where I see value in relatively high starting yields and moderate duration exposure, with tactical opportunities to increase duration further. Bonds appear well-positioned to provide potentially attractive income and ballast in investor portfolios as markets could remain volatile in the weeks and months ahead.
Great. So for some, that
so we
may
don't
simply
know.
Own, mean owning. We don't know. That's the beauty of a technician.
Well, it comes back
here
to diversification, obviously,
yes,
too.
Exactly.
And, of course, making sure your goals and your income needs are in line with the reality of what your retirement needs.
Mm-hmm. It just means that a diversified portfolio may be more valuable now than it has been in some time. It's interesting watching what gold and silver are doing. Just because I'm highlighting this morning probably means that we're due for correction. But it's amazing what silver, silver's at a 12 or 13 year high right now. Gold is at an all-time high. Gold is knocking at the door at some, in some respects, of $3,100 an ounce. It's about $3,040 at this point. Ron has it pulled up. Yeah, $3,043. So it's there are some drivers on the debt situation still knocking on our door within these United States of America, and their ability with that tax package to continue to cut spending. That'll be a stretch that I think many are concerned about.
When do you think, just speculate, the tariffs are probably the big question mark, the impact, we don't know, a lot of speculation. Mm-hmm. When will investors or people know, have an idea of how they're going to impact, plus the tax package if that passes? Do you think late this year, summertime, or...
It'll be really interesting on immediately, what kind of change to prices those tariffs actually mean, and how much of those price changes are passed on to consumers. That's going to be one part of it. Every business is going to be looking to make huge changes in how, where they're accessing their supplies, how they're paying for them. There'll be adjustments that will be made to try to mediate those price increases. We'll see how good they are at doing that, and what real price changes we actually, the consumer actually winds up seeing in terms of those hard goods, if you will, cars and all the rest. Well, it's interesting. And in terms of the real impact, I would give it 3 to 6 months, but Ron, I'm only guessing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a guess.
And consumer spending might be impacted because people might detect all this uncertainty from the Fed, and they may tighten up a little bit.
Yes.
Possibly.
Which we're starting to see right now. It'll be interesting. And the other part of that is, if the trading partners capitulate and, those go away, even moderately compared to what they are right now, that could be a real release of the governors, if you will, of the economy. There are lots of potentials there. There is a lot of investment going on, which some would actually consider even inflationary. I guess I'd rather have some inflation and growth than no inflation and no growth. That seems like an easy trade to me. Beth has got some really interesting stats. Some financial?
Some not.
One or two not. Yeah. Right? Go for it, Beth.
Yeah. In January of this year, personal income increased by almost $300 billion, or 0.9%, since December of last year, while the personal consumption expenditures decreased by 0.2% since last year, which is just over $30 billion.
It's great. So, it means the families are getting ahead at this point.
We made more and spent less.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Wallets are growing. It's good. And that is from the Bureau of Economic Analysis. And then we have a new study by the Pew Research Center found that 47% of U.S. adults agree that people have become ruder since the pandemic.
Ruder.
More rude? Ruder?
More rude,
there's
I think.
There's, yeah,
rude.
There's
more rude.
A
is
rule
ruder
to that.
A word?
We'll ask the professor on Tuesday.
Let's ask him.
Yeah, and another 44% of respondents believe that people have remained the same, while 9% of respondents argued that people are more polite.
Oh.
And I do have to say I would not agree with that 47% of people that think that.
You don't think?
Not in my little world, my rose-colored glasses, but good.
I thought you were going to say 47% of adults think people have become more rude. The other 53% said, get out of my way, bud. Target me.
Yeah. I'm not taking your stupid survey.
Yeah.
Right. And that was from the Pew Research Center. And then these are the not-so-financial-based statistics. Scientists are developing tech that detects taste molecules, converts them into electrical signals, and sends them to a mouthpiece that releases chemicals to mimic flavors.
To do what to flavors?
Mimic flavors.
Mimic
them. Isn't that wild?
Why?
You can For less calories, maybe.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, that's the best steak I've ever had, you know, that sort of thing.
Okay.
Guilt-free consumption, right? And so they can already transmit these signals from California to Ohio. Yeah.
Amazing.
I don't know why Ohio, but
diversity. Exactly. To create diversity. Culinary diversity.
By the way, it's rudest.
Okay.
Rudest.
Okay.
Natural or raw, crude, primitive, undeveloped, simple, elemental. Ignorant, unlearned, inelegant, uncouth. Probably too much of Miriam. Thank you.
No,
very much.
I love it. So my dad was an English teacher, and we loved going over words. And I think that the rule is dependent on the number of syllables, maybe, in the word, and that is whether you would say most or you add er, you know, bad, yeah, so something like that. Maybe right. I don't know. Don't quote me on that one.
All right.
So our next one is coming to Disney next year. Real Star Wars droids roaming around. They're working with Disney is working with Google DeepMind and NVIDIA's new Newton model to bring them to life. And this will have them walking around parks, be more expressive, and do tricky tasks all on their own. And that's from The Current, which is, and we did look this up. Sorry, Dennis.
Yes. No. Go ahead.
They are the cutest little droids. Just walking around, they look like little kids or little chickens bobbing around. It's really interesting, the personality that they're able to create.
Yeah. It is. If you look it up on YouTube, Disney droids, it's really kind of interesting to see that.
I just want to see what they're charging at Disney World now.
I'm sure the price is going to go up with the droids being there.
Pick it up on the back end.
Right? $89 a day if you get a 3-day pass.
Wow.
For kids, it's $59.
That's incredible.
Yeah. We'll see if the droids add on to that, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So,
wow. Yeah, it's amazing what AI is doing and the impact that's having.
So that's for investors. That, you know, they're always looking down the road, and you mentioned the taste thing, but nanobots, microtechnology, AI, they probably focused a lot on that future, seeing what will develop and what company will lead the way.
They do, and any funds, usually a mutual funds related to growth types of investments, are going to tend to embrace that sort of technological capability within the companies that they're buying, whether it's NVIDIA, Google, or Palantir, whatever it is. Lots of companies in that frontier, and the spending increase that they are predicting is going to be significant this year, too. I think overall spending... recollection, I think, was $13 billion, but that seems a bit light to me in terms of AI spending for this year, 2025. The reality is that they are reinvesting at stunning numbers. Taiwan Semiconductor is known as being a stalwart within the computer chip realm, and they are investing, I think the last number I heard was $100 billion in these
United States. A lot of it in the U.S., right?
In the U.S., to produce that, I think for a lot of reasons, given the threat from China and all the rest. But it does present opportunities for those who are patient and those who are willing to forego price certainty, because there will be a lot of volatility on this road. But the amazing components of how much faster computer chips are moving at this point and their abilities. A few years back, about every 3 years that they would double in their capacity. Now it's months that they're doubling. So it's gone exponential in terms of computing. And they're calling portions of that quantum computing. And that is the ability to do just stunning numbers of computations in a very, very short time. So given their ability to do that, that's where you get these droids that can mimic human movements. That's the new change that's going on. Talk about exciting. Exciting times here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that'll wrap it up for this edition of New Retirement Radio, Prout Financial Design in Traverse City, Michigan, proutfinancialdesign.com. Dennis Prout, Nathan Prout, Beth Shire, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Pleasure, Ron. Thanks.
Thanks.